If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for joining us again today on what is another episode of Planet Porky, the podcast. And delighted to say Leslie-Ann Jones, of course, is with me here in the studio. Leslie-Ann, have you got over the coughing fit that you had last time we were in the studio?
It's coming and going. It's a bit of air conditioning reaction.
Air conditioning, could be. I know what you mean.
It tends to take my voice away.
It's difficult with air conditioning studios because if you put it on, it's sometimes noisy, although you'd think they'd invent an air conditioning for a studio that wouldn't be noisy. But if you turn it off, it can get quite hot.
Well, we're only human. We cough like everybody else.
Now, during your illustrious career, on both sides of the Atlantic and around the world, you will have been into some very spectacular houses, particularly in LA and New York and places like that. So I want to ask you your opinion on a house which has just been valued in London at £250 million. And it is the property of a man called John Cordwell. 15-bedroom, 8-floor Mayfair mansion. John Cordwell was the first guy to make £1 billion out of mobile phones. He sold out phones for you. And this house, he paid £87 million for it in 2012. He's had it renovated, gutted. It's now worth £250 million. It includes things like having a river running through his lounge.
Now, may I ask, is this an artificial river or is it... a tributary of the Thames?
It's an artificial river.
Looks like Versailles, the house, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, if you look at the pictures.
It's a fake river.
It's not a fake river.
It's only a little sort of thing, but it's rather ornate. It's quite pretty. It goes under the table, so if you got drunk at his dinner party, you'll end up in the river, right?
Yeah, you would.
It's quite a novelty, isn't it?
It's quite a novelty, but what's the best house you've been in?
Undoubtedly was David Bowie's house on Mystique.
Oh, right, okay.
Which he lent me for a month.
To write a book?
When I wrote the first Freddie Mercury book.
And just describe it to us, please. You know, give us the image of the sunshine paradise you were living in for a month.
Britannia Bay House on this beautiful bay.
Yes.
Just on the jetty of which was Basil's Bar.
Right.
The only bar on the whole of Mystique at the time.
Yeah.
Run by Basil Charles, the famous... bar owner.
Yep.
And this house was a sort of Indonesian pavilion.
Like Bali?
Yes.
Bali.
And all the teak was antique teak.
Bali.
If you can say antique teak.
It
was all shipped in.
Yeah.
And
well, Branson did that to his island in Necker. He shipped all the wood in from Europe.
Bowie, of course.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
But it was a magnificent place. It had an octagonal external dining room.
How big was it?
Oh, vast. Kind of not Buckingham Palace vast, but, you know, on a scale.
Right, okay. And who lived there?
So nobody lived there all the time.
Right.
But there was a full-time staff, so a housekeeper.
What, like, do you mean 12 months a year there was a full-time staff there?
Yeah.
Just in case David Bowie dropped
and
in for a few days?
Yeah. This housekeeper had the keys to other properties on the island because people tend not to live there
all year round, but they go
there for the season, like Christmas and New Year.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah.
And all the maids, and there was a cook there. I slept in David Bowie's bed.
Right.
Of course I did. Soak up a bit of DNA, you know.
Yeah.
And the view out of the double French windows was across the ocean to St. Vincent.
Golly, that's amazing.
And it was so beautiful. Yeah. It was very inspiring.
Sounds beautiful, yeah. I did the same thing in Branson's house on Necker. I got invited there when I was in the British Virgin Islands once. Don't know why. I was on a place called Little Dick, is it? Little Dicks? No, it's called Little Dicks. It's the island. There's a load of islands.
Did my eyebrows go up there?
Yeah, they did. But I think it's Little Dicks, D-I-X, it's called, yeah. And there's a few other islands there. And suddenly we got a message saying, do you want to come over and
Hang out.
Well, Branson wasn't there. That's the funny thing, you see.
So who invited you?
Well, the Branson organisation said, if you want to go over and say hello and spend a couple of nights there, which we did. And again, they had a housekeeper full-time and all that. Oh, I know the reason why I went. Because he had then the only snooker table in the whole of the Caribbean. We went over to play a snooker tournament. That's right. Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah, exactly. But also, all the facilities were put at our disposal. Neck is very small. The house is on the cliff top at one end of the island. And then you can walk to the other end in 10 minutes where there's a boathouse. And that's where he keeps the boats to do the water skiing. And after not water skiing for probably 30 years, I went right round Necker behind a boat on water skis without falling off. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
I was amazed.
But it all got gusted away recently, didn't it? Or wasn't there a massive fire or something?
There was a massive fire about...
Kate Winslet was there, wasn't she?
No, I think both things have happened. There was a fire about 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago. And they rebuilt it. And then there was very bad weather, I think, more recently across the whole of the Caribbean, wasn't
there? That's the Caribbean for you.
Yeah.
I mean, Air Studios on Montserrat got blown away, didn't it?
Yes, yes.
And you know that if you're going to build a luxurious property in the path of, you know, typhoons and whatever else, that there's a very high chance that you're going to lose it all.
I totally agree with you. Totally agree. Now, you just mentioned Air Studios there, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if, you know, you're reading my mind, because the next person I was going to ask you about is Donna Air, okay?
Okay.
Now, do you know Donna Air at all?
I've not met her.
She's dated multimillionaires Damien Aspinall.
He's the one that had the zoo. Aspinall's zoo.
That's right. And Kate Middleton's brother, James.
Yeah, they broke up.
Seems like a bit of a Burke to me, that guy, James. He keeps inventing businesses or setting up businesses which simply don't work.
Well, he's another Prince Edward, isn't he?
He is, yeah, I think. Yeah, everything fails. But mercifully, Donna can laugh about her reputation as a woman who only goes for posh boys. It's not entirely true, she says. When asked if she'd ever had a boyfriend who isn't posh, she said, yes, they only write about my posh boyfriends, though I've definitely had a couple of very unposh ones.
She's put herself around a bit, in other words.
Well, you see, I'm at a disadvantage here because I don't actually know what Donna Air does. Is she...
Well, I think the name says it all, doesn't it, really?
Well, no, I think you've been unkind in calling her an airhead.
I didn't say it, you did.
She's not a singer, is she?
No, she's a
presenter?
TV personality, as they used to say in the old days.
Well, anyway, look, I have to say she's very good looking.
Yes, she is, but it takes more than that.
So I wish her...
all the best.
The best of luck, yeah. Now, that brings me on to another lady of prominence in the world of showbiz, and that's Madonna. And Madonna has echoed something which I've been trying to say ever since the Harry Meghan thing broke up. Blew up, OK. It says, Madonna has invited Harry and Meghan to rent her luxury New York apartment after telling them, don't run off to Canada, it's so boring there. I totally agree. Have you been to Canada?
Yeah, several times. I mean, it's a vast country and the provinces all differ from one another. You've got every kind of landscape and opportunity there.
Yeah.
I can't see that anyone could say that a whole country the size of Canada is all boring.
Oh, it is boring. It is. I mean,
it's very cold in, say, in Ontario during the winter.
I totally agree. You go to the Arctic
Circle. You never go outside.
It could be minus 30 and all that kind of stuff.
You park your car in a car park. Yep. And then you go down in a lift and into a massive, great shopping mall and into the offices, TV studios, whatever else.
Yeah.
You never go outside.
No.
So that would be boring after a while.
Yeah, well, it is boring. I mean...
Have you been up that tower, the tallest thing in Toronto?
No, I haven't.
That wobbles in the wind.
That's a TV tower,
isn't
it?
It's really frightening.
Yeah, no, I haven't, no.
I sat down on the floor up there, quite scared to go back down.
I don't blame you. I've been to Vancouver, where they stay on that island.
Amazingly beautiful.
Beautiful Vancouver.
Part of the world.
I did a summit there with... it was Bill Clinton and Boris... What's his name? The Russian guy, you know...
Karloff?
No, Karloff is an actor. Boris Johnson's our MP.
Joking.
How many other Borises do we know? Boris Pasternak
was an author.
This is Boris... I'll remember it in a minute anyway. But he was the guy, he was the Russian leader, he was blonde-haired, he was a clown, and he was pissed all the time, right? And
Yeltsin.
Boris Yeltsin, well done, thank you very much indeed. Right on top of the game there with current affairs and politics. And what happened was... I went up there from New York. It's supposed to be a world summit, you know, and it's quite boring, actually. But only boring things happen in Canada. And Boris got completely pissed. And the summit really hardly never took place because he was so pissed he couldn't get off this boat on Vancouver Island, you know. And it was shambolic. And I think a year after that, excuse me, he was flying back from some other summit in America to Russia, when he agreed to touch down in Ireland and see the Irish Prime Minister about something, even though nobody ever knew there'd been a relationship between Russia and Ireland about anything, you know what I mean? And again, the plane landed at Dublin Airport and the red carpet was rolled out and all the military guards turned up and all that, and then nothing. Boris couldn't get off the plane. He was too pissed again on vodka on a transatlantic flight. He'd drunk, you know, a couple of bottles of vodka. So after waiting half an hour, they fastened the door of the plane again, took the red carpet away, and the military guard marched off, and the Russian plane took off and went back to
Disgraceful,
Russia.
Disgraceful, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
But question, why would Madonna want Harry and Meghan to rent her apartment?
For status.
What's that? Yeah, but it's just going to be overrun with media.
Yeah, well, she's never had a problem with that, has she?
I guess, no.
I mean, do you remember in all the days of Fleet Street when we had, you know, very big foreign staffs, nobody ever had a correspondent in Canada? Did they?
No,
why would you?
I guess.
You know, you have correspondents in America, in Russia, in Italy, in Rome, in France, you know, in Australia. But nobody ever had a Canada correspondent because nothing's ever happened in Canada.
But her TV career was based there, wasn't it?
Yeah, well,
I think the one series that she was known for and didn't actually even star in.
That's right, yeah.
But
what's that called? Steps?
Suits.
Suits, that's
I never
right,
saw
yeah.
it.
Yeah, no, I've never seen it because it wasn't even famous around the world, you know. Anyway,
she's going to be a Disney princess now, isn't she? Now that Harry's been touting for work.
Yeah, but do you think that marriage will last now? I don't.
I hope it does.
I think now she's got the title, I'm the Duchess of Sussex. She can be that the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's got worldwide publicity on being the reforming royal, as she would see herself. We don't. We see her as the destructive royal who's pulling the royal family apart. But, I mean, as far as she's concerned now, she's in clover. She can do whatever she wants. Call, you know, she can call the shots. She can name the numbers, name the figures. And
imagine that divorce, though.
Yeah,
I mean, now, this is sad that we're even talking in these terms.
I cannot see that lasting more than a
what
couple of
worries
years
me is
because he's
the
come
baby.
Out of a family in which he was born into and lived into all his life. She's lived in the real world. She only spent 18 months inside the royal family and then went back to her world.
Mm-hmm.
She knows her world very well. Harry has no idea what her world
no,
is like.
No, he's a fish out of water.
Yeah.
I am worried about him.
Yeah.
But I'm more
yeah.
worried about what happens to Archie
yeah.
if and when they do split.
The child?
Yeah, because Harry will never see his child and that will really screw him up.
Well, I always thought it was very odd that a few weeks, months after Archie was born, his mother could leave him for all that time.
Yeah.
I found that so very odd. You're a mother of three children.
Yeah.
How can a months old baby be left in the care of a nanny and your best friend, you know, the other TV presenter woman, while you fly back to England with Harry to announce I'm leaving the royal family?
Wouldn't have happened.
And then fly back?
Would
How
not
could that have happened.
Happened?
How could that have happened? Anyway, getting back to Madonna, of course, she's one of those wonderful people, most privileged in the world, to live on Central Park. So Madge said, they're welcome to live in my flat as an alternative. That's funny, isn't it? Because Americans don't call their homes flats, do they? They call them apartments.
No, I know that somebody's put words into her mouth there.
Well, maybe.
Well spotted.
As an alternative to Frogmore Cottage in Windsor, she says, I'll let them sublet my apartment, that's a direct quote, apartment, in Central Park West. Now, I love Central Park.
Yeah, it's beautiful there.
I love Central Park.
Mm-hmm.
So I like Central Park South, where when I go to America, if I get the choice, I stay at the Essex House Hotel. I love it.
Lovely.
Beautiful hotel, legendary hotel. So that means that if you're standing in front of the Essex House Hotel, you're on South, so you've got the Dakota on Central Park West, where, of course, John Lennon was cruelly cut down. And you've got Central Park East on the right-hand side, where I think somebody's got a $130 million apartment. I can't remember who it is. Mr. Bloomfield?
All of them.
Yeah, all of them, yeah.
But that's where all the lovely, small art galleries and museums are along there.
That's right.
The Guggenheim and so on.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Absolutely. And to me, it's one of my, honestly, favourite places in the world. If I ever got the chance now in this sort of weather, a foot of snow on Central Park and a cocktail in the Essex House Hotel.
It's iconic. It's a wonderful thing to do.
What's the... is it the Oak Bar in the...
The Oak Room in the Plaza Hotel.
Oak Room in the Plaza, that's right, yeah. Might go in there as well.
I got my handbag nicked in there, though.
Oh, yeah, you told me that. What happened there?
Oh, you know, you think you're safe in a rich place, right?
Yeah,
rich pickings.
Yeah, and you're not.
Yeah,
right.
Anyway.
Now then, one thing that you've been getting very worked up about is this story you told me about that the we've always known there've been special sort of agencies around, right, who will volunteer to try and find out whether your partner's cheating by following them around, taking pictures, all that kind of stuff. This has got to a whole new level, okay? Because what happens now is a company has started to manufacture DNA kits, right, which they will give you. And what you do is, if your husband says he's out at a business meeting and he comes back, you can then search his clothes for fibres and all that, put them into a DNA pack, send them off to this company who will then analyse them. And if it comes back, this is the hair belonging to a blonde woman aged about 27 or something like that. They can find minute spots of perfume on his clothes. So you can say to him, oh, I'm sending your suit to the cleaners. You don't. You send it to these DNA chasers, OK? And they can analyse the coat forensically with scientific equipment and find out, for instance, if the perfume on the collar of that jacket is not your wife's perfume, you know what I mean?
The original checkmate.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is like hiring a private detective, but going one further,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
So, look, if you're doing that, if you're hiring a private dick, or if you're buying this product and engaging with these people, you already have a problem.
Yes.
And you already know that your marriage is in a state.
Well, do you? Because isn't everybody worrying all the time whether their marriage is stable?
Look, you trust your partner or you don't.
Particularly, rich couples and that kind of stuff.
You trust your partner or you don't.
Yeah.
And once the trust is gone, the marriage is kaput anyway.
Right.
So if you are suspicious enough to engage in this kind of activity,
you
already know that your marriage is on the skids.
Right. Okay, you believe that, do you?
In my experience.
Yeah, I think people are so paranoid in, these high-power marriages. And
which are only about money, probably not usually about love.
Well, maybe.
You've got a lot to lose, so
maybe.
I can see it from their point of view.
Yeah.
But that's mercenary anyway.
Yes.
I don't want that kind of marriage. There's only one reason to get married, isn't there?
I don't know, because I've never been married. I suppose it's,
You've got to fall in love with somebody.
Yeah, I suppose you've got to fall in love.
And if you fall in love with somebody, then you trust them, and you don't need all this crap.
Yeah, well, you say that, but I mean, human relationships are so complicated. It's never that easy. You know, sometimes people get married and then 2 years later, one finds out something about the other they said they didn't know. What? You went out with that guy? I didn't know that.
Well,
I've known him for years.
People do change as well.
Or something
you can
like
go
that,
off
you know
people
what I mean?
As well.
And that can be a terrible
problem. Okay, so if you're looking to get divorced,
yes.
I see every reason for doing this kind of thing.
Yes.
If you're looking to save your marriage, you turn a blind eye.
Yeah, well, if you turn a blind eye, then it's a marriage that is clearly fractured because you're saying, oh, I'm not prepared to confront the real problem, it means the marriage will end. People who do that are often footballers' wives.
Well, yeah.
Because if you're married to a footballer who earns, up to £10 million a year, you've got to be a very, very solid woman to say, right, I've caught you out, bollocks to this, I'm not being humiliated like this, it's all over. But then you lose the kudos of being the player's
which
wife.
Which is why they're married to him in the first place.
And you lose the stability of living in a £10 million house. You might have to live in a £4 million house, but on your own.
Yeah.
And also, you get booted out of that circle of elite friendship. You
which
know
is
what I mean?
Horrible, isn't it? It's just fake and nasty. And
well,
why would you want to be involved in something like that in the first place?
Yeah.
Unless you were fake and nasty yourself.
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, I don't want to name names, but we know
go on.
We know, well, take John Terry, okay?
I don't like him.
Who's now a coach at, John's... He's had a fantastic football career.
It's a bit of a sleaze, I have to say.
Well, he's had a fantastic football career. He's now a coach at Aston Villa, but he won, multiple trophies at Chelsea. But there have been occasions when John has been accused of associating with people who weren't necessarily his wife, but his wife has never publicly spoken up about it. Never, John's denied all the accusations, let's make that clear. Excuse me, but the accusations were about, and his wife has turned a blind eye to the accusations. That's
well, look
what
at what happened with David and Victoria Beckham when Rebecca Lewes was on the scene.
Yeah, but David's never admitted to having had a relationship
with
her.
He hasn't, the same thing as the Terrys, as you've just described.
Yes,
so if you are Mrs. John Terry, or if you are Mrs. David Beckham, you've obviously decided that you want to keep that package together, and that's your brand, because Beckham is a very strong brand.
Sure.
So anything that is going to damage it is going to be resisted.
Yeah.
So that is more important to you than your integrity.
But she was just as famous as David when they married and therefore started on the same footing as him. And I think she's probably more famous than David actively on a day-to-day basis now, because David's not playing football anymore, you know what I mean?
And she's still fashion designer.
Yeah, she's still fashion designer. Actually, the only stories I read about her fashion business is how much she's losing on an annual basis. But nevertheless, she's in the papers now more than David, who is actually only talking about a football stadium.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thanks for being with us today. As usual, of course, Leslie Ann forensically examining the lives of the rich and famous, many of whom she has mixed with during her career as rock chic writer extraordinaire. Now, one person I want to ask you about, right back up in the top of the headlines again now, Leslie Ann, and this is Michael Barrymore, OK?
Oh, God.
The Michael Barrymore case has been reopened officially. So whilst there's been newspaper investigations and theories and inquiries over the years, a senior police officer has now officially reopened the case. It's ongoing as you and I speak here now. What about Michael Barrymore? What dealings did you have with Michael Barrymore?
I interviewed him a couple of times back in the day when he was a very big star on television.
Oh, huge.
Actually.
Earning £2 million a year. Had his own studio at ITV where he was working. Nobody else could use it. You know, it was the Michael Barrymore studio and that kind of stuff.
I tell you who I really liked and warmed to was his wife, Cheryl.
Yes.
Who was his manager.
She's dead now, isn't she?
Sadly, she did.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, I liked her.
She went through an awful lot, did Cheryl, because he was obviously living a double life.
Yes.
He was a closet homosexual.
Yes, he was.
They were parading as a happily married couple.
Yes.
She must have known.
Yeah.
But she purported to not know and gave the impression that she was very shocked.
Yes.
By his covert activity. And I think it literally broke her heart.
The last snatched picture I saw of Michael Barrymore, and this is where the skill of a photographer comes in, showed him gaunt, ashen-faced. He knows something now is going to be revealed. 8 people were at that party.
He's
is that
a dead
right?
man walking. On there were. Night. So the party took place in his mansion in Essex.
Raiden. It was a bungalow.
He'd gone to a club. He'd picked up these people, most of those 8, he didn't know them before.
And they weren't necessarily homosexuals, by the way.
No, they weren't. One was a woman, and they were considerably younger than him.
Yes.
So Barrymore at the time was 48, and the eldest of the others who attended was 31.
Right.
Okay. There was cocaine, ecstasy and alcohol in the system of Stuart Lubbock,
the
deceased.
Boy found floating face down in his swimming pool.
But it's suspected that he died in the jacuzzi and that he was raped. And there was...
Raped or sexually assaulted in a very vicious manner.
Sexually assaulted with an instrument.
That's right.
And various items of evidence went missing,
such as... A door handle and a thermometer
for
the swimming pool.
Which is a rather large thing anybody who owns a swimming pool knows.
Yeah.
Now, 8 people, or 9, including the deceased...
Yeah.
8 living people know what happened that night.
Or some of those 8 living people know, because the others may not have known. They might have been in another part of the house, and those perpetrators may never have told them what happened.
What I would do here,
I
think it's very simple. It's 20-odd years down the line.
Yeah.
So the time has come now to solve this, because a life was taken, a man was killed.
Yes.
This poor man, Stuart Lubbock, his father, Terry, is appealing for the truth.
He has been for 20 years.
He doesn't want to go to his grave not knowing how his son died
or who
was responsible.
And his son wasn't homosexual, by the way.
No. And somebody needs to tell the truth.
Yes.
So you take the 8 people, you put them all in isolation, and you break them down.
Yes.
And you question and cross-examine, and somebody in the end will break down and say, look, I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
I can't live with myself anymore. I've got to tell the truth. This is what happened.
Yeah. No, I agree.
That has to happen. And why has it taken 20 years?
Yeah. But you see, the problem is with Michael Barrymore that the moment somebody said to him, there's a body floating in the pool, he fled from his own property. He ran. I mean, you couldn't give anybody an indication of alleged guilt more than running from the scene of a crime, could you?
Well, I'm not saying, I'm not even suggesting that he was anything to do with
this. Neither am
this
I, but what I'm saying is, because it was his property,
yeah.
He may have a feeling, the alleged guilt I'm talking about, is he was in control of the scene of the crime. It
Why
was
did
his
he
house.
Run away?
It was, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Terror.
It was his it's, house,
That's
yeah.
the fight or flight instinct, isn't it,
and
in humans?
Then, and he then disappeared. I mean, his career collapsed almost immediately.
Overnight?
Overnight, yeah. But he then disappeared to New Zealand for about 3 years. Well, New Zealand's the furthest place you can get on Earth away from the United Kingdom if you want to stay out of the way of a police investigation.
You are never going to get away from the press.
About a horrendous crime that took place at your house.
Yeah. So I
wonder who lives there now, by the way.
Or maybe it's been demolished. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Stuart Lubbock's injuries were consistent with a rape.
Yes, they were.
Somebody did that.
Yes.
Somebody did that, and it was one of those people
well,
there.
I'm not sure that Stuart Lubbock was raped or he was just violently and brutally assaulted. An action that killed him,
but
ruptured his internal
organs. If you use an instrument to commit that procedure,
yeah.
It's the same thing.
That
it's still a rape.
You're absolutely right, yeah.
Because it's a violation of somebody's body.
I agree. I totally agree. Now, first of all, did you ever find Michael Barrymore funny before all this
I'm
happened?
Sorry I didn't.
No, I didn't. I just didn't know
why
he was
called... But he appealed to a certain level, didn't he?
I didn't know why he was called a comic or a comedian. You know, what was his famous expressions? You're
white,
I'm all white.
All white.
You're white, I'm all white. That's all he seemed to say.
Yeah.
And walk around in front of an audience mumbling nonsense, because I'm sure he was under the influence of a lot of things a lot of the time.
Undoubtedly.
The first crack I remember, because I was, like you, a Fleet Street journalist in those days, was he did some live show somewhere, and it was somewhere like Brighton or Bournemouth, you know, a big, like, Bournemouth, the big centre, Bournemouth International, something like that. And that night, for the first time, was spotted sprinting up and down the hotel corridor naked and full of cocaine or drugs or something, you know what I mean? And that's the first report that ever came in on Michael Barrymore, who had, you know, lived a pretty clean life up to there.
Yeah.
And then it just spiralled out of control. Clearly one of his problems was coming out as a homosexual because you may have covered this story. Didn't he, after a show in London, go off to some little comedy club somewhere in the East End, stand on the stage, and then ceremonially take off his wedding ring, the ring that wedded him to
Cheryl,
to Cheryl, threw it on the floor and said, OK, that's it, I'm out. And, you know, it was a celebration in the homosexual world because in those days there was still the question of the closet, you know, for homosexuals. It wasn't anything like as understanding a society as we
no,
have
No, there was
these
no
days.
Tolerance back then, was there?
Yeah, no, exactly. So, I don't, you know, I never found him funny, and I don't find a lot of comics funny anyway. I don't know why...
But there was
know.
No sophistication about him. There was no real intelligence to his level of humour.
Yeah.
And I always had a sort of... nasty feeling, you know, that sort of creepy feeling that you get that somebody is sending up their audience.
Yes, yes.
I always had that feeling.
Almost
about
like
him.
I don't know why you fools are laughing at me, but as long as the 2 million years keeps rolling,
something very supercilious about him.
No,
not appealing.
I think you're right.
But I want to know the truth, like everybody else.
I'm desperate to know the truth because A, you want justice for the young lad who died.
Yeah.
But B,
and closure for his dad.
Closure for his dad. But C, we want Michael Barrymore to come clean.
Yeah.
He must know. He must know more than he's told us. I'm not saying...
Otherwise, why would you run away?
Why would you run away? But he must know more, and we need to know. And I don't know if he's misguidedly trying to protect somebody, you know, and their reputation or something like that, or who knows.
But he's never going to make a comeback, is he? I mean, who's going to give him a job?
Well, even recently, when he was supposed to be
Dancing
on
Ice.
He busted his arm, didn't he? Busted his wrist or something.
Look, he's, what is he, 67 now?
Something like that.
So a 67-year-old man should not be training to dance on Dancing on Ice anyway.
I totally agree.
But that is a bit desperate, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've been in the wilderness for all these years.
Yeah.
You're going to make your comeback. How?
Yeah, exactly. I've met him a couple of times over the years because... I'm not quite sure why, he's ended up in the director's box at Everton Football Club. Now, there's clearly a connection between...
Mate of the chairman.
Exactly. Clearly a connection between Michael Barrymore and Mr. William Kenwright, Bill Kenwright, who is the proprietor of one of the world's biggest theatre impresario agencies, OK? And will have worked with Barrymore in the past. And the thing I do know about Mr. Kenwright, who's been a friend of mine for a good 20 years, is he is a very compassionate man, and he's always ready to give somebody a chance. You can imagine in that world of showbiz that Bill works in. I've been in Bill's office when literally he's had phone calls from, you know, celebrities in America, you know, household names. Who was the one that's... It was I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and things like that. He gets phone calls from people...
During a washed-up moment.
Well, I don't know.
Please relaunch me.
Or whatever. But I mean, I've seen it. And so what I'm saying is, Mr. Kenwright will have seen some terrible excesses within the showbiz world. Bill's almost a teetotaler. He hasn't drink occasionally. Leads a very clean life. Very close to his partner, Jenny. Has been for nearly 30 years, I think, now. And extremely straightforward man. But he will have seen excesses, you know, unacceptable levels of behaviour. And he's... One time, Michael Barrymore was in the director's box. I might have a connection with Arsenal, London team, or something like that. But on another occasion... Jenny Seagrove, asked another very successful actress, obviously, asked me to go along and help her with a promotional day for her sanctuary, Main Chance Sanctuary, which looks after horses, OK? And I'm very, very happy. I'm a patron. I make regular donations and do work for them. And this was what you will know more than me about as a beauty day. So you go along to this place where women have all these facials and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
What's it called?
A spa day.
A spa day, something like that. That's right, yeah. And for instance, the great Michelle somebody, EastEnders actress.
Michelle Collins.
Michelle Collins, she was there. Yeah, was she in Coronation Street as well?
I don't know.
I think she was.
She was in EastEnders. Yeah.
Yeah, she was in EastEnders. She was there. Some of the girls from Sky Sports News came, including McQueen. The footballer's name is McQueen, and his daughter now works for Sky Sports News. Hayley. Hayley McQueen.
Oh, Hayley, okay.
Hayley McQueen, lovely. But the one person who turned up amazingly was Michael Barrymore, who was just wandering around, you know, and I found it odd. The last person who turned up that day, by the way, eventually Mr. Kenwright came along. He'd had a matinee show in London. It was a Sunday afternoon. And he brought... the lead singer of Wet, Wet, Wet with him, Marty.
Oh, Marty Pello.
Marty Pello, that's right, yeah. Do
lovely
you know Marty?
Guy. I do know Marty.
Do you?
He hit the deck at one point. He was a heroin addict for a point.
I think he was, yeah.
But he revived his career in musical theatre, actually.
Yes.
And he played Che Guevara in a revival of Evita.
Che Guevara,
which he was very good in.
Yeah.
But look, Barrymore is toxic.
Yeah. Oh, completely.
How are you ever going to sell that
completely
figure as a TV personality or whatever ever again?
Yes.
There isn't even a panto
that
Michael Barrymore could relaunch his career in.
No,
there isn't.
No, there isn't. I totally agree with you, and you're absolutely right. Now, what I want to talk to you about, Leslie Ann, is electric cars.
Oh, yeah.
Now, electric cars are going to wreck the planet. You know
they are. Yeah, because nobody's taken on board that batteries have got components in them that won't break down.
It's unbelievable. Let me tell you this. I've been doing some research here. Right. You won't believe how much damage creating an electric car does, because you have to cut down a forest somewhere in the Far East to get all the metals that are in the batteries. You see what I mean? The situation is even worse with electric cars. A Swedish government report says that making the battery alone for an electric car releases as much CO2 as 8 years' worth of driving a petrol vehicle.
There you go.
I mean, why do people still persist in saying... To start off with, if 25 million cars in this country were electrically powered, you'd need another 10 nuclear power stations to provide the electricity to give them the power.
Which is far more damaging to the environment.
Of course it is.
Than the petrol. So they haven't done their homework.
Nope.
Here. They've made a rash rule that gives us 15 more years.
Yes.
Before we can have to abandon all our petrol and hybrid cars.
Unbelievable.
It's going to ruin the car industry.
Completely.
They've been made promises that have been gone back on.
It will ruin the economy. I've got this report here. The latest eco edict is for all new cars to be electric in just 15 years. The irony is that will drive you crazy. Old bangers can actually be greener. Your car is greener than any electric car, OK?
Definitely. I've got a little car, a noddy car. I used to drive a people carrier, but I'm much more eco-aware now.
Yeah, yeah.
I can drive all the way to Exeter, where my youngest daughter is at university, and back on less than a tank of petrol.
That's fantastic.
And my road tax is £20 a year.
Golly, that's incredible. Yeah. What sort of car is it?
It's just a little Toyota Rigo.
Lovely.
It's a noddy car.
Brilliant. That's brilliant. Now, it says here, to meet this target of electric cars 15 years' time, we would need at least 25 million new roadside charging points. And even if you started putting those in today, you'd have to install 4,000 new ones a day, right? Charging
points. To meet the demand.
Yeah, for the next 15 years, just to meet demand in 15 years'
well,
time,
that's
okay?
Impossible.
The roads and pavements would have to be ripped up in the process, which of course will create plumes of emissions, right?
Yep.
Because of the amount of building work. The Engineer magazine says that charging an electric car at home with a medium-speed charger would be like leaving the electric shower on all night. If just a few people in the street decided to do that, it will blow the local distribution fuse in your neighbourhood. Nowhere is there a city in this country geared up for mass powering up of vehicles overnight.
It'll
shut down,
explode the grid.
It would explode the grid and shut down electric power stations,
yep.
Okay?
My mum, who lives down in Kent,
yep.
She's been without electricity now for 2 days.
Why?
They had to bring a generator. She's 85. They
yeah.
had to bring a generator
yeah. Yeah.
to put in her garage yesterday just so
yeah.
that she can have some light.
Yeah.
And my mum's there by herself.
Right.
They cannot find the fault.
Yeah.
So it's all very basic, yeah. most elementary.
Yeah.
If they can't even fix a fault in the
no.
road supplying electricity to a
no.
house,
no.
how are they going to solve this one?
No, I totally agree. It is such a load of bollocks. I can't believe we've all been taken over like this. And yet, at the same time, Elon Musk, who produces these cars, these Tesla cars, which I think are electric, huge electric batteries,
yeah.
the value of his company is soaring.
But who could afford one of those?
16 billion quid last week or something.
They're ridiculously expensive.
Ridiculously expensive. And again, it's just a posh elite few talking it up in Hollywood
yeah.
and saying, I'm going to be a good guy. I'm going to
yeah,
have
yeah,
a,
look at me.
I'm going to have a battery-powered car.
I've got trees growing out of the back seat, guys.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember when Gordon Brown said, right, I'm going to cut the duty on diesel because the scientists say we should all be driving diesel cars,
oh, yeah,
they're
yeah.
cleaner.
Look where that one
10
went.
Years later,
yeah.
completely the reverse.
Yeah.
Hang on, we just found out diesel vehicles are filthy and dirty
yeah.
and are giving your children all sorts of cancers and that kind of stuff. We'll cut that out. They're making the same mistake with battery
yes, they
cars.
Are.
They're making exactly the same mistake. They've got to clear forest in the Far East to produce this lithium and whatever other metals they need. I mean, the Democratic Republic of Congo apparently has got more of this lithium stuff or whatever you need than anywhere else in the world. And wars will start over
yes,
mining this
will.
Stuff, you know? Anyway, there you go. So that's it, folks. Thanks very much indeed for joining us today on Life on Planet Porky. Keep in touch, please. It's planetporkypod@gmail.com. Send
yeah.
us a note. And Leslie Ann, how do people get hold of you?
At LAJ Writer.
At LAJ Writers. Just before we go, by the way, give people an update, please, on your forthcoming book, John Lennon. Have you finished your manuscript?
I'm just about there. It has been the hardest book I've ever written in my life.
Right.
And it's going to be published on the 17th of September.
Yeah.
And by Bonnier, the major publishers, it's coming
Brilliant.
Out simultaneously in 27 countries. And,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds very
I'm almost
exciting.
There. So, yeah.
Well, we'll keep giving people updates on that, folks. You need to
I'm very
in,
excited about
Ryan,
it.
And
it's,
you
it's
might
been...
be able to meet Leslie Ann and get your book signed when this,
yeah, we'll do some
this
of that.
Fantastic tome comes
love
out.
Love to hear from people
one
about...
of the great men of our yes. lifetimes, John Lennon.
Yeah, please do keep writing because it's very, very good to be in touch and,
of course it
and
is.
To see how we're going down.
Absolutely. Okay, folks, I'm Mike Parry-8. I'm also the Porkmeister. This is Planet Porky. We'll be back with you again very soon. A year after that, excuse me, he was flying back from some other summit in America to Russia when he agreed to touch down in Ireland and see the Irish Prime Minister about something, even though nobody ever knew there'd been a relationship between Russia and Ireland about anything, you know what I mean? And again, the plane landed at Dublin Airport and the red carpet was rolled out and all the military guards turned up and all that. And then nothing. Boris couldn't get off the plane. He was too pissed again. I never found him funny, and I don't find a lot of comics funny anyway. I don't know why.
But there was
know.
No sophistication about him. There was no real intelligence to his
yeah.
level of humour.
Yeah.
And I always had a sort of nasty feeling. You know that sort of creepy feeling that you
yeah.
get? That somebody is sending up their audience.
Yes. Yes.
I always have that feeling
almost
about
like,
him.
I don't know why you fools are laughing at me, but as
yeah.
long as the 2 million
exactly.
year keeps rolling in.
Something very
yeah.
supercilious about
yeah.
him.
No,
not appealing.
I think you're right.
But I want to know the truth, like everybody else.
I'm desperate to know the truth because, A, you want justice for the young lad who died.
Yeah.
But B...
And closure for his dad.
Closure for his dad. But C, we want Michael Barrymore to come clean.
Yeah.
He must know. He must know more than he's told us. I'm not saying...
Otherwise, why would you run away?
Why would you run away? But he must know more, and we need to know. I was on a place called Little Dick, is it? Little Dick's? No, it's called Little Dick's. It's the island.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.